3, 2, 1. Hi, I'm Joe Tate, and I have a podcast. It's called Over the Timeline. I look back at the highlights and a few lowlights of my sports broadcast career. Over the Timeline, brought to you by the Life Care Centers of Elyria, Westlake, and Medina.
Time for another Over the Timeline with Joe Tate, brought to you by Life Care Center of Elyria, Medina, and Westlake. Joe, I'm hoping you recognize this, at least, maybe, at all.
That's the Mount Union fight song.
Do all fight songs sound alike after a while?
Interestingly enough, over the 31 years I was involved with Mount Union, their marching band really developed into an outstanding group, not only the way they looked, the way they marched, but also the way they played the music. By the time I retired, the Mount Union band was very, very presentable, and it came a long way in those 31 years, just as the football team did.
Wait a minute, 31 years? You were involved with broadcasting Mount Union football for 31 years?
That is true.
All right, when was the start?
I started either in 85 or 86.
All right. How good was Mount Union in 1985 or 86?
Good enough to make the NCAA playoffs, which is why I showed up there in the first place. They had Harry Paytas, who was at the time the major domo for expanding Mount Union's visibility, athletically anyway. When they decided that they were going to play this football game and it was going to be at Mount Union, they wanted to televise it. And initially they got Jack Lambert, who played for the Pittsburgh Steelers, to be the color pronouncer, and Harry Paytas was going to do the play-by-play. And then, as I understand it, Jack Lambert had other things he had to do, which had a little more import to him than going to Mount Union football games. So I get this call out of a clear blue sky from Harry Paytas saying, we're going to televise a Mount Union playoff football game, and we need somebody to do the play-by-play. And I said, that sounds like something I'd love to do. And so it happened to work into a Saturday where I was going to be at home with the Cavaliers. So, and actually with the Indians as well in those days. And so I buzzed down to Mount Union, and we televised the football game against Wittenberg, and it did not go well. At least the game didn't go, but it was the first one I did. And it was one of the very few losses that I ever witnessed when I did the games either on radio or TV, because at that point, Larry Karras became the head coach and put together a veritable dynasty at Mount Union. He was the one, they said, he never recruited, he just reloaded. And the teams that they put on the field over the years I was involved were exceptional and won a number of NCAA Division III championships.
I was a student at Baldwin-Wallace, so I was familiar with Mount Union somewhat. At the time when I was there, Wittenberg was our main rival in the OAC, and they kind of realigned different things at that point. And that was just a little bit prior to this. And then it seems that became owned by Mount Union, the Purple Raiders, every year, as you've been, so stated there. It looks like you were there longer than Larry was. Larry came in 1986 and I guess retired and was done in 2012 at that point.
Yeah, so. I was there. If that's when Larry showed up, that's when I showed up. Okay. Because Ken Wable, who had been the longtime Mount Union football coach, turned out actually to be an analyst for us in one of those first telecasts. And, I don't think he liked it that much. I think he would much rather have been sitting there watching the game and still coaching in his own mind rather than trying to put it into TV language. So I only did the one game with Ken Wable, and then the rest of it I did with Harry Paytas.
Now, how did this turn into sort of this 30-plus years for doing that?
Like, well, they got some great response from people who saw the games. They played them on a television station in Canton and then replayed them. We replayed them for a while on Channel 55. We played on 61, on 43. I think maybe one or two of them even snuck over on Channel 8 over the years in terms of late-night replay.
And Kevin found him, and a great throw right there. Touchdown. Great run, B.J. B.J. Mitchell just scooted through that John Carroll defense for the final 2 yards. Myers fires a strike. It's knocked up in the air and almost.
The man up on Meacham, and I just don't like that matching for them.
Quick pitch downfield, diving catch.
Wow.
That was Nichols. All right. And again, the touchdown is good. Great fake. Back to Burke. Airs it out for the end zone, and it is
what
touchdown.
A dime throw
it
by Burke.
Caught. Wow. What a grab.
Oh, my. Now, were you ever on screen as much? I mean, a lot of times broadcasters on sporting events on TV, it's all about the game, and occasionally maybe at the start welcoming the people or something like that.
It used to be when we started out that I would interview the coach down on the gridiron in front of the camera. And then, I don't know, the coach got tired of looking at me, or they wanted to spend more time in the actual game. The games took a lot of time because Mount Union scored a lot of points, and they also had great passing games. And that a team with great passing also has a tendency to run up a lot of time. So for airtime, trying to condense it down to the point where stations in Cleveland would be interested, even at 11 o'clock at night of replaying the TV, you had to have a certain opening there. And so the pregame interviews on the field went by the board very early in my years down there.
When I had heard at some point that you did Mount Union football, and I'd known you for doing Cavaliers and the Indians and that, not so much about this other stuff we've learned over the timeline that we've talked about over your years of doing things for college football. So a college football game was really not out of the norm for you at the time, even when they asked you for that, right?
No, well, I really got my feet wet doing Monmouth College football out in Illinois when I was going to school and before I went into the Army. And it was something I thoroughly enjoyed. I think doing Monmouth College football on the radio finally proved to my father that maybe I was headed for a career that might make a buck and keep me out of harm's way, because he always feared that I was going right down the primrose path with all this play-by-play sports. But when he used to come down to the campus and sit there and listen to the games, then it began to dawn on him, well, maybe he can make a career out of this. And later on, he used to come into Chicago after he retired and ride the team bus down to Chicago Stadium. And, he really got to see what the inner workings of the NBA was all about, and it helped solidify the association with my dad over a long period of time.
Let's talk a little bit about doing color commentary for TV as opposed to radio. You have to dial it back a little bit, right?
You should dial it back a lot. My philosophy always has been, in TV, the announcer, the play-by-play announcer, is kind of the nuts and bolts guy. He just kind of holds things together with a relative minimum amount of verbiage. If there's going to be things to discuss, let the color guy take care of that. But the instrument that does all the heavy work is the camera. Like, if you're letting the camera do its thing and you've got good camera people, you're going to have a good telecast, and it does not require the play-by-play announcer to give long speeches or throw out a lot of extraneous stuff that people aren't interested in the first place.
When you're doing Mount Union College football on, is it University of Mount Union? What do they call themselves these
days?
It
is now University of Mount Union. Okay. It was just good old Mount Union College when I was there.
Right. Is this a, who's doing the camera work, the production? Is this a student-related thing, a school? Who's actually behind all of that?
No, Image Video was a television. They had a TV station down in Canton. I believe it was Channel 52. And they also did a lot of production and televising of high school football all down in that region. And they also did the Mount Union games on Saturday. And the thing I loved about them was they never tried to do things they couldn't do. In other words, they knew physically how many cameras they had, who the people were running them were, and what they could or could not do. And they never tried to be NBC at Mount Union. They stayed Image Video, and they did what they did very, very well. It was always a pleasure to work with them.
Were you doing just home games, or did you travel with the team?
No, we did. Well, we did some road games. We wandered off to places like Washington of St. Louis. We went off to St. John Fisher up in New York. Of course, playoffs, we'd go to Whitewater, and that became an annual battle between Whitewater and Mount Union. We actually did a game at Camp Randall Stadium in Madison, Wisconsin, because the lacrosse football stadium was absolutely buried in snow, so they brought the game down to Camp Randall Stadium, where the Wisconsin Badgers play. It was covered with snow, but they actually had people go in there and shovel out the stands from goal line to goal line. And unfortunately, we had to do our own shoveling up in the broadcast booth. And it was an experience. I ended up with pneumonia at the end of that one. But they prevailed over Wisconsin lacrosse. So it was a positive trip in the long run, even though I ended up in the hospital.
Well, it just gives you another story to tell broadcasters along the way. And keep your health. Of course, that's the key for any broadcaster, is your voice is really what gets you through things. We've got more with Joe Tate as we continue over the timeline. It's brought to you by Life Care Center of Elyria, Medina, and Westlake, as we continue talking to Joe about his time calling Mount Union football.
And diving through for yardage and then some, breaking into the open at the 50, the 45, and the 40, and finally.
Ooh, is that a horse collar?
Boy, it was close.
He was a voice heard by Cleveland Cavalier and Cleveland Indians fans for decades.
There's a long drive to left field!
Until illness struck.
I've been at Life Care twice. Both times, they helped me fight my way back home. It wasn't easy, but I came back.
Meet Joe Tate.
Life Care helped get me back on my feet.
Real people, real heroes. Life Care Centers of America.
With locations in Elyria, Westlake, and Medina.
Bringing the safeties down. I like Meacham right here. Ball back to Burke. He lobs for Meacham, and he's got it! Touchdown! How about that?
Joe, in your time with covering Mount Union, they made a couple of trips or a number to the Amos Alonzo Stag Bowl. Were you able to travel with that, or was there other regulations of who could broadcast that particular game?
Yeah, that was always carried by ESPN, and so I never made it down to the Stag Bowl. It primarily was being played down in Salem, Virginia. I understand they did a great job. I watched the games. First they were in the afternoon, then they shifted to Friday nights, but I never made it down to the Stag Bowl. One thing I always had hoped for was that my old school, Monmouth, would end up playing Mount Union for the NCAA Division III championship, and I would have walked down to Salem to see that one. That was been my dream. But
you'd have to call it down the middle, though, right? You'd have to not So yeah. Too much favoritism on that, I suppose. What is it about that Division III or that style of football that really appeals to you? I know maybe it has to do with sort of just playing for the love of the game. Is that kind of where it starts, really?
You got it. The fact that the players who were there, the students who were there, were students first and athletes second, and they had to toe the line as far as their academics were concerned. So this was something they did on the side and worked very hard at it, and they were very good at it as well. But it was not a question of high-priced tutors and things of that nature. The team really was governed by the overall academic standards of the school.
Did you interact much with those players at all during this time, or have them chat with you or find out things about them? Or
The only thing, Bruce, that I ever really associated with their split end, Todd Zupra, lives right down the road from me here in Lafayette Township. So I had the pleasure of saying, oh, here comes my neighbor back into the ball game. And I don't even think Keith Jackson in his greatest days could have looked down on the gridiron and said, oh, here comes my neighbor back into the ball game. So it was unique unto itself. But it was, I didn't really have a chance to mingle with the troops because I would come in many, many Saturdays, would come in at about 11 o'clock in the morning, go up in the press box, do my 2 hours of prep, and then do the game, and then hop back in the car and buzz right back down to then Gund Arena because the Cavs were going to be playing a basketball game that night. So I was doing doubleheaders for many, many years.
Does the purple and go with the wine and gold, or you have color conflicts sometimes when you're?
No, I didn't have any number problems.
That's funny. I always wonder too. Did you kind of keep an ear on what was happening with Mount Union, or at the time, you know, you're maybe traveling on the road and you know they're happening? I don't know. Sometimes if you're calling a team, you get attached to them in a sense, just to see how they're doing, and you know, as a sports fan, I suppose.
Well, I tell you what I did do was I would always call the sports information director to find out if the team had been on the road and I wasn't involved with the game. From wherever I happened to be with the Cavaliers, I would call them and get a wrap-up on the game just so I knew what was going on. Yeah, I kept tabs on the team by telephone primarily.
I saw a video where they presented you with an award a couple of years ago. Tell me about that.
I got a helmet. They actually gave me, and it obviously had been worn in a game by somebody because it showed some marks of combat on the field. But they gave me this helmet and a very nice plaque, and it sits in my den in a position of prominence. I have two autographed footballs from championship teams that were given to me over the years. So I have mementos of my days at Mount Union. And they were good days, Bruce. I enjoyed it. There was nothing better than going down to Alliance, Ohio on a Saturday afternoon. They had a football stadium, which on one side was very modern, on the other side looked like it was back from 1910. Kept up well, but it was old, and the atmosphere down there on a Saturday afternoon was really, really good. And it, of course, on occasion helped get me through some Cavalier seasons that really weren't that good. So it was always nice to know on a Saturday, well, you might get one win out of this day, even if you can't get two.
Sure. And there's nothing like a noon, 1 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday. A lot of times football now has been moved to the nighttime and you're under lights. You lose something about being out there in the daylight, I believe, just in watching
that. I agree
that
with you 100%. The atmosphere at Mount Union, and I'm sure at Baldwin Wallace, and probably in all of the schools in the Ohio Athletic Conference, it was very, very positive for those who enjoy that sort of thing, and I certainly did.
Well, Mount Union's coach Larry Karras coaching there for many years, and I guess then his son took over.
Vince took over, and he's now leaving to go to the University of Toledo, I believe, as defensive coordinator. Mount Union alums who played football for Larry are everywhere in high school and in college. Matt Campbell, who was at Mount Union. In fact, a great story about Matt Campbell was he went with his mom to Pittsburgh. The Pitt was interested in getting his talents for football at the University of Pittsburgh. And on the way home, they went through Alliance, and he saw the football field, and he saw practice going on. So he tells his mom, pull over, I want to watch this. So he got out, took a look, and when it was over, he says, you know, this is where I'd like to play ball. And, of course, he had a fabulous career for Mount Union, went on and became the head coach at the University of Toledo, and from there went to Iowa State. He's now the head coach at Iowa State and has really brought success to Iowa State in football, something they haven't had for a long, long time. So there are Mount Union alums everywhere in the coaching ranks in the college and high school.
A pass to the end zone, it is intercepted in the end zone.
That was Isaiah Chambers.
Quick pitch over the middle to Nichols. 40, 45, 50, 40, 35. He eludes one, he eludes two, and is finally stopped at the 33.
So how did it turn into that, you know, 3 decades? Was it 1 year at a time, and was there a longer-term commitment that you had, or it was just people just – you kept showing up, and they kept letting you do it?
Well, basically, Harry Paytas would go to Coach Karras, who was the athletic director as well, and say, Coach, you want to do TV again this fall? And – you know, and he would say yes. So as long as he said yes, then Harry would call me and say, okay, we're on. Here are the games we're going to do. And that's the way it went. But Coach Karras was the determinant in terms of what games were televised and also whether we did or not. But he always said yes.
Did you share space with do they have a school radio station or another radio broadcast that was up there happening at the time?
There was the Alliance radio station. They were in a booth to our right, and the students operated out of an area down below with where the writers were. So they had a very good press box at Mount once they got it built. Originally, when I was down there, I had to climb a ladder to get up into where we televised the games. And it was a good thing that they built the new press box before my legs went out, because I'm not sure I could have made it, although they said they were going to get a cherry picker and put me up in the booth that way if they had to. So
you learned
that would have been something folks could come to watch early.
That would be fun. Yes, exactly. There's two things. One, I thought you probably learned very early you didn't have a fear of heights, or maybe you do and you got over it very quickly, depending on where they put you here or other broadcasts you had to do. And I'm thinking now for broadcast schools, they should add a physical fitness portion to this. Because
if that were the case, there'd be a lot of announcers out of work, let me tell you, including me.
Well, I've had to take equipment up to a press box, and you look at the field and you look up where the press box is, and many times these things are higher than any treetop you had ever seen, and you have to think, how am I taking all this equipment? It's like wearing a, you know, your rucksack or something, taking it up to the
Well, I did a radio game for WEOL in Elyria. Keystone was playing, I believe it was Wellington. It was a battle royal over there. And the gym was filled to overflowing by 5 o'clock for that contest. We were televising it when we were doing it on radio. When I walked in, I asked Tim Alcorn, who was the play-by-play guy, I said, where are we working tonight? Because I couldn't see any spots available. And he pointed up on the wall, and the folks at Keystone had put, and this is in the old gym, they had put a ladder against the wall and riveted it into the wall, and there was a little perch up there at the top where we were going to do the game, and I had to go over and scale that ladder to get up into the booth. And I kind of feared for my well-being. I also feared for Tim's well-being because he was behind me. And if I went, you know.
What about the people down below? I would have feared for them more, I suppose.
Well, I was just worried about Tim. I didn't worry about anybody else. They were all standing there looking up. Right. So they, at least if they'd seen me coming, they could have jumped aside.
Exactly. Well, you know, that's the thing. Sometimes you have a game, you have to broadcast it, and, you know, you just figure out, where can I get to see? We've done the ones where people have been outside press box if they're full inside or up on top. The listener at home doesn't need to know where you're getting the information from as long as you're able to bring it to them. So that's part of the job, I suppose.
Well said.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Joe, we appreciate your time once again talking about things that go on in your career. This is your time during Mount Union football. And we appreciate your time this morning with our Over the Timeline, brought to you by Life Care Center of Elyria, Medina, and Westlake.
Thank you, Bruce. And you, of course, are free to play my favorite tune again, because the Mount Union fight song was in my ears for 31 years, and I remember it well.
We yell, we say, "Go Raiders"? Is that what it is? Or is there another phrase that they use?
Raiders, Purple Raiders, yeah.